Over and over and over again throughout the Gospels, Jesus challenges us. There's not a single aspect of our life, of our human experience, that is not challenged by Jesus. There's literally nothing we can experience, we can go through from our day-to-day life, from the most absolute mundane all the way to the biggest, most profound things, everything in between. The Gospels challenge. Jesus has something to say to that. Some of them are very difficult, and some of them are a little easier to kind of integrate. We get it. Okay, I need to fix that, and we move on. But in my opinion, today's gospel presents one of those most difficult aspects of the challenge of the gospel in our day-to-day life. In our gospel, three different times, Jesus sets up these three different conditions of people who are disbarred from being his disciples. People who will fail the test of discipleship of following Jesus. Three different things that he said would bar someone from being his disciple today. The first, if anyone comes to me without hating his father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, and even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Now that would have sounded, it would have slapped the ears of his listeners 2,000 years ago, and the Hebrew, the exact same way it slaps our ears. You have to hate your family, your mom and dad, brothers and sisters. And maybe for some of you, like, oh, I got that one. I've hated my dad. He's been a jerk my whole life. But man, what are we talking about with hate here? Yes, it does. It does slap the ear, like, you want me to hate my family. Now, we need to understand context here. Jesus, over and over again, uses what's called hyperbole, where he overspeaks in order to make a dramatic effect and drive home his point. Hey, this is something really big and important. So, you have to hate your family, right? Your brothers and sisters, and even your own life. Now, are we talking about hate in the sense that, you know, we all hate the Raiders or something like that? No, different kind of sense, all right? What we're talking about, what Jesus is getting at, it's the same hyperbole where if your eye causes you to sin, gouge it out. If your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. Like, that's hyperbole. He's driving home his point. You look at the doctors of the church, you look at the early Christians, how do they understand this idea of hate in today's gospel? It's not so much where we're opposed to our family, but where we properly order them. So anything that we place above God in that sense, anything, any possession that we have, any person in our lives, any relationship that becomes our paramount and our absolute highest value and priority, anything that takes that place from God is something that is going to, that is off, and is something that, in that sense, we need to hate. In other words, put it in its proper order. It's like a pyramid. You look at a pyramid where if it's flipped upside down and the point, the pinnacle, the high point is now the base, it becomes unstable. Versus when it's a pyramid with a wide base, the love of God, our relationship with the Lord as the foundation. And then our family goes on that. And then our possessions go on that. And there's a proper hierarchy, but the Lord has to be the foundation. That's what Jesus is getting at. The properly ordered desires and hierarchy of what we value. The other two conditions that Jesus says, whoever does not take up his cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. We cannot avoid the cross, brothers and sisters. All of us encounter the cross. All of us encounter suffering. It's just a fact of life. But it's what we do with that cross, whether we reject it and deny it or embrace it. And then finally, if you do not renounce all of your possessions, you cannot be my disciple. Again, it's the proper ordering and hierarchy of our goods. Is God the foundation? Now, we look at this, and you could say, yeah, I think I'm good. Like, I'm fine. I love my family. I love God. He's at the center. But I think there's more subtleness that comes into this than we realize. And C.S. Lewis, I've mentioned this book before, The Great Divorce. wonderful book, but it's the divorce, the separation, the chasm between heaven and hell. That's what he writes about. And keep in mind, he's a Protestant, so he doesn't necessarily have a category for purgatory, but that's essentially what he's trying to describe. These souls that they've died, they're kind of in the gates, the waiting area, so to speak, of trying to get to heaven. And they show up at the outskirts, the bus stop, essentially, of heaven's gates. And way off in the distance, you can see the mountains, and way, way off in the distance, up in the mountains, you can see the kingdom of God, and that's where they're trying to get to. But when they get off the bus and they show up at the gates, there's people there to meet each of them. And each of the different ghosts that are there, they have a different story of different thing that's holding them back from pursuing heaven. And there's one character in particular, her name is Pam. And Pam had lost a son earlier. His name was Michael. And Pam was obsessed with Michael. And she, when she got off the bus, she's like, "Where's Michael? I know he's here. Where is he? Let me see." And Michael didn't greet him. Instead, it was some other relative or something. And she was irate. "Michael should be here. I came here to see Michael. I've been waiting all these years to see him. And I've kept everything the same. And I preserved his room and kind of made this shrine. And I wouldn't let anybody throw away any of his stuff. And I wanted to see my..." Like, this whole thing, she gets so worked up because Michael's not there. And her relative says, "Well, let's go talk to God. Let's go meet..." "No, I want to see Michael." And she gets so to the point where she's like, "Fine, if Michael's not here, if I can't see him, then I'm done. I'm not even, it's not even worth it." She gets back on the bus and she's like, "If Michael wants to come see me, he can come see me in hell, but I'm not doing all this." Okay, maybe that's a dramatic kind of extreme example. But I think C.S. Lewis's point is this, where our family members and our love, what we assume is love for them, it stops with them. That they become the target, they become the destination, they become the final point of our love. And it turns out that's not actually love. And if it is, it comes back around to self-love. And unfortunately, there's so many of us who have lost family members and loved ones, and sometimes we can get stuck in that trap of getting angry at God. Why did he do this? Why did he take him? Why did he have to? And sometimes we can work our way through that and the grief and the pain of loss, but sometimes we get stuck there to one degree or another. It's not a matter of, do I love God over here or do I love my family over here? That's not what we're talking about. I think that's a false dichotomy. It's more like this. If I am pursuing the love of God, the way I pursue God is through my family. My family's not a target that's opposed to my love of the Lord. It's I pursue God through them to love the Lord, and in doing so, I love them as well. But when we set up this false dichotomy, we end up just getting stuck. And sometimes the most painful things we see that can be, in my experience as a priest, one of the most painful things I've ever had to walk with couples through is the loss of a child and miscarriage. I'll never forget, I was in seminary at this point. I was working as a hospital chaplain over the summer, and this is, I don't know, probably 14 or 15 years ago. It's been a long time. But there was one couple I went and visited, and their pregnancy was in trouble. 16 weeks. She was 16 weeks pregnant. And so they were there in the hospital that evening. I met with them. I talked with them. I prayed with them and all this. And then I went home, and the next morning when I came back, I found that they had miscarried the baby in the night. And this 16-week-old baby lived for 5 hours, or maybe 3 hours. I think it was 3 hours outside of the womb. And so they were able to baptize the baby. And for those 3 hours that this little boy lived, he was skin to skin with his mother. And when I came the next morning, His mother asked me, do you want to hold my baby? And this baby could fit in my hand. And just remember thinking, I'm holding the body of a saint. And I was trying to come up with something profound to say, something to, I don't know, inspire hope, but I had nothing. But this mother said something that has stuck with me ever since. She said, I am so grateful that God chose me to be the mother of this child. And that for these 3 hours, the only thing my child knew was love.